Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. For 12 years, the Al-Jarwan family, Nashat, his wife, and their six children, has lived at Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan. But in 2023, a path to resettlement opened. That's when St. Louis and Ann Ross, along with nine friends and community members, began working to bring the Syrian refugee family to St. Louis through a U.S. State Department program called Welcome Corps. Ross and her group raised more than $17,000 for the Al-Jarwan's resettlement. The family went through an extensive vetting process, and finally, a date, February 3, 2025, was set for the Al-Jarwan's to leave Jordan and reunite with family already living in St. Louis. Those plans did not end up coming to fruition. In the wake of President Trump's January executive order to suspend all refugee resettlement, the Al-Jarwan family became one among thousands already vetted and approved, and in limbo. But Ann Ross and fellow volunteers in St. Louis are still working to get the Al-Jarwan's here. That fight includes an appeal to Senator Josh Hawley's office about a possible exception in the family's case. Earlier this month, we spoke with Nashat Al-Jarwan and Ann Ross about their experience, their respective journeys, their work together on the family's case, and their hopes for meeting in person if or when resettlement in St. Louis finally becomes a reality. I started the conversation by asking Nashat what life is like at the refugee camp.
In the most simplest terms, life is very hard here. For example, we're in the summer right now. The summer is very hot. The electricity is very slim. It's very limited opportunities and very limited resources here for us in the camp. And after spending all of these years here, it's become clear that the need to leave is very strong. And I've had to find opportunities for work outside of the camp because it's very limited here. And as much as I can describe to you the details of living here, the reality is it's much worse, and it's very hard.
Mm-hmm. How have you raised your children there, and how many were born at Zaatari?
I have one daughter that was born in Zaatari in 2020, and the rest of my sons were born in Syria. The situation was very hard for us raising them here in the camp, especially with schools. Their schools are very far. There's little to no transportation for them, and they've had to depend on themselves at a younger age. And it takes a lot to get to school, and then also at home studying and just the home life. There's very little electricity for them throughout the day, which makes it hard for them to focus, and it makes it hard to raise them as well. I've also had to leave the house often for work opportunities, and that's tough to not be there for them. In Syria, it was also a tough situation for them, especially with all the with the hardships that came with the war. But despite all of that, we continue to encourage them to pursue their education despite the hardships, even though they were very prevalent there.
When you first arrived, Nashat, did you think that you would be there for a short time?
We thought we would be here for months, and then we'd return. We thought the situation with the war would calm down and we'd be able to return, but we did not expect this.
Mm-hmm. When did you know that you would not be leaving?
It was about 2 years in when we realized that we would not have the opportunity to even go back because government officials had now labeled us as terrorists for leaving. Even though we were refugees, they considered us that we left, quote-unquote, illegally and threatened us with jail if we were to return and not serve in the army. So it became clear then to us that we were not able to return 2 years in.
Clearly, the living situation, so many circumstances around what is happening has made it very difficult to, you know, to find ways to live well. Are there things that you and your family have done to make joy for yourselves?
To be frank, it is very hard to find joy here in the refugee camp with the harsh living conditions and the desert-like living conditions out here. But the people around us, our social circle, but most importantly, our family in St. Louis, and being in communication with them. And when the topic came of the opportunity to potentially be able to join them, that was truly the first time we truly found joy, that we could have joy in our life and the opportunity to be with them.
I'd like to bring in another voice to this conversation. Anne Ross is a St. Louis resident who is one of the volunteers who's been part of the coalition that is trying to bring Nashat and his family to the U.S. and to be with his family. Anne, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Elaine.
Can you tell us what it means to serve as a family partner through this welcome program?
Sure. I got involved with Welcome Neighbor around the same time I retired at the end of 2021. And I became a family partner. And they ask you to stay with the family for 1 year. But now it's been over 2 years. And I'm with Nishat's sister and brother-in-law back here in St. Louis. And we've become friends. Mm-hmm. So it's not a volunteer gig anymore. They're part of my family too.
Mm-hmm. How is it that you came to know about Welcome Neighbor?
Well, quite a while ago, a friend of mine through tennis told us about the program, and several of us got involved with their it's called Supper Club, mm-hmm. where they offer a meal for $25 made by either the Syrian or Afghan refugees. The women, and so most of that money goes to the refugee families. Only about 5% of it stays at Welcome Neighbor, but it's a fundraiser for both the families and Welcome Neighbor. It's a very great, it's a great program, and that's how I got involved initially.
Mm-hmm. And involved with Nashat's sister-in-law. Oh,
so I got involved with them in 2023 because the family here, who are family with them, told me about this program, and I did some research into it. This was at the very beginning of 2023. I talked to several immigration attorneys about it, and they didn't really know much about Welcome Corps. So I reached out on my own through like International Institute, and I was able to do some training and get and learn more about this program that originally came about by the Biden administration, and a very ingenious way to get people like me involved in the resettlement program for refugees.
Mm-hmm. Nashat, I'd like to return to you. The process that you had to go through, did you have many steps to take to try to come to the U.S.?
When Anne agreed to sponsor us, they had asked us for our ID, our refugee status, our files, and we sent all of that in, and we filled out our application with Welcome Corps, and we thank Anne for helping raise funds to help us pay for this process. I thank her with my whole heart for helping us with this application. And we did what we had to do with this process in Amman, Jordan, and filled out our application. We also had interviews with government officials, with U.S. government officials, about every detail of our family and what our life was like and who we were. And there were multiple interviews, and everything was really successful, and it was really positive. We submitted our medical records, and we even were educated about what life is like in the U.S. and getting us ready for travel to the United States and getting adjusted to this new life that we were about to have. And then in February, we got notice that our appointment to travel was now delayed until an unknown date.
Mm-hmm. So, and coming back to you, Nashat did talk about some of what had to happen on this end in order for the application to be put in. But what did it take? What were some of the components that you and other sponsor families had to put together?
Okay, it was a long process. So the first thing I did was gather my friends together. I asked for volunteers to help me in this process. Welcome Corps only requires that you have 5 people on your team. We had 9. So we knew that we would be able to get the job done. Mm-hmm. Then we had to create a welcome plan. It's a 20-page document that asks for so many details. It took weeks to put that together. And I thought that that might be the worst part of it. But then I looked at the application and realized that there was a lot more work to do. So the welcome plan was just step one. And then in the meantime, we created a GoFundMe page because we had to raise 60% of the total amount that we had to raise by the time they got here. And that 60% turned out to be slightly over $10,000. And we were able to do that very quickly by just sending it out to our friends and family. It was, the people overwhelmed us with their generosity. And so once we had the money and we were able to prove that to Welcome Corps, then we were able to file the application. And we did that at the beginning of 24, sorry. And it took a couple months with Welcome Corps coming back to us and asking us for more detail. And it was finally approved in March of 24. But then we had to wait. Then it was out of our hands. Mm-hmm. So we had to wait to hear. And it took until that next December before we finally heard that they had a travel date.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we decided to do, actually before that, because we had to raise another $7,000, we decided to do a trivia night, which was held on January 18th of 2025, 2 days before the inauguration. And we were able to raise way more than we needed. We ended up with over $23,000 in our bank account, which we only needed 17. So we knew that we had it together. And while all this was going on, we were also collecting furniture, bedding, all the things that they would need to survive once they got here. And we had a storage unit that we still have, that storage unit full of furniture for them for whenever they do arrive. And so then, unfortunately, well, they got a travel date of February 3rd, 2025. But on January 20th, we found out that the resettlement program was postponed, basically. Mm-hmm. It wasn't ended, but so then our next step was to go to our senators and our representatives, because there are several, and ask for help, for assistance in getting this family here.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to get a little bit of assistance from Senator Hawley's constituent assistance person. His name is Sean Cowing. But the State Department is still not cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of on hold right now.
So this hold, you know, which started with Trump's executive order,
mm-hmm.
to halt any arrivals of refugees, what was it that was going through your mind at that point, Anne?
Oh, my gosh. We were devastated. I mean, I knew it was going to be bad, but I didn't think it would be that bad. I thought that our family would be able to come here. Because their travel date was just, less than 2 weeks away. We were absolutely devastated, but not as bad as Nishat and his family.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the work that has been happening with Senator Hawley's mm-hmm. office. Where does that stand now?
It's still in the State Department's hands. So I have been periodically reaching out to Mr. Cowing, updating him on what's going on in the courts. Like right now, a judge in Washington has told the Trump administration that they have to allow the families who already had travel dates to be able to come, but that has not happened. Mm-hmm. And I keep reminding Mr. Cowing of this fact and hoping that he would, with his contacts at the State Department, stress this issue. But so far it hasn't happened, but we're not giving up. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep pressing.
We're listening to my conversation with St. Louisan Anne Ross and Syrian refugee Nashat Al-Jirwan. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back very shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation. With a commitment to serving the St. Louis community through local partnerships and charitable support, guided by Parrot's core values. More at parrot.com/culture.
Welcome back. This hour, we're listening to my recent conversation with St. Louisan Anne Ross and Syrian refugee Nashat Al-Jirwan. Let's dive back into the conversation. Here's Nashat sharing the kinds of things he and his wife talk about with their St. Louis-based family members.
Most of the time when we would talk, it would be about getting ready to come to St. Louis, what life would be like in St. Louis, getting our living situation ready in St. Louis, even with the details of just like getting the house ready with furniture and stuff like that. We would also talk about meeting Anne, and we were super excited to see her because she's been one of the most helpful people for us in this situation. We were looking forward to meeting her at the airport, and we have gifts ready to give to people, like Anne especially, and our family. And we've waited for such a long time to see and meet the amazing woman who's helped us throughout this process. So that was one of the main things that we would talk about.
And how does it feel to hear that from Nashat?
Well, it makes me want to cry. It's unnecessary to give praise to us because it's something that we really wanted to do. And it's unnecessary to give us gifts. Again, because it's something that we just really, I mean, we care about this so much. That in itself is a reward. So, yes, it's overwhelming.
And what is it that you wish people better understood about, you know, the immigration or, you know, refugee resettlement process at this moment? I mean, have there been conversations that you have had with people? Because of what you have experienced so far, mm-hmm. where maybe you've been able to help someone see a facet they had not seen before?
Refugees who come here are so motivated to make their lives better and also the lives of the people around them better, to become good, productive citizens of our country and make our country better. And I'm not sure if people realize that about both refugees and immigrants. And they're not sucking any resources from society that they don't deserve, okay? A lot of the immigrants pay into our system but get nothing in return. Now, refugees, on the other hand, they're on a path to citizenship. They come in with permanent status and can apply for a green card within a year after they're here, and then citizenship within 5 years. So they do deserve Medicaid, SNAP, if they qualify, and other benefits that our country provides, which is, you know, important to get them off on a good start. So they just gives so much to our society. Just look in our city alone. The Syrian and the Afghan families who have come recently, in the past, the Bosnian community, the Vietnamese community, and on. There are so many vibrant communities in our city and in our country that give so much to society. The diversity, you know, the culture, the religion, everything about them is a benefit to our society.
Nashat, what would you like people to know or understand about what you are thinking and feeling right now?
My feelings are that this situation is very hard, being stuck waiting. We've put off so much because we've anticipated that we were set to travel. We put off work opportunities, things that we had planned here. And as the travel date approached, we had to quit our jobs. My son, I have a son who is in school, stopped going to school. I quit my job. My other sons quit their jobs because we were banking on leaving on our travel date. We left our house. We sold our furniture. And because of that, because we were leaving the camp, we also lost our refugee privileges of the camp, and that being some health care and some opportunities that are just afforded to refugees. But since we have left the camp, we are no longer afforded those opportunities. So now we're just stuck. But we are still optimistic that we'll be able to travel soon.
Mm-hmm. Nashat, what do you think about when you imagine your life with your wife and your children and with your wife's brother and his family? What do you imagine about the United States?
So this is first and foremost my entire family's dream. And obviously, there's more freedom and there's more democracy, and we can't wait to be part of the St. Louis community and contribute to it. And it looks like a very amazing community, and we even saw pictures of it on Google, and it looks also very beautiful, the whole region. I know it's going to be an amazing future for us in St. Louis, and I pray to God that we're able to be reunited with our family there, and thank everyone who is helping us try to get to that reality.
And is there something that you would like to say to Nashat?
I am so happy to get to hear your voice finally. I've talked to your wife, Muna, on the phone, but I have never heard your voice, and this is a real pleasure for me. And I cannot wait for you guys to get off that plane at Lambert Air Force Base and give you a big hug.
I thank you for being such an amazing woman, and it's been such a joy getting to know you these past 2 years. Thank you with all of my heart for helping us through this process.
It is definitely my pleasure.
Yeah. Shukran. Nashat, thank you so much, and thank you as well.
Thank you, Elaine. I really appreciate being invited to talk about the family.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Laura, for translating. And I hope that I'm able to meet you soon, with me and my family. God willing.
That was my conversation with Nashat Al-Jerwan, a Syrian husband and father of six who's lived in the Za'atari refugee camp in Jordan for the past 12 years. He and his family were supposed to arrive in the U.S. as refugees in February, but their travel date came just days after President Trump's executive order that suspended refugee resettlement. Also joining us was St. Louis resident Anne Ross. She and nine other volunteers worked for more than a year and a half and raised more than $17,000 to bring Nashat and his family to St. Louis through the Welcome Corps Refugee Resettlement Program. In February, Anne reached out to Missouri's congressional delegation, asking if they would file for an exception to the executive order on Nashat and his family's behalf. Anne says Senator Eric Schmidt, Representative Wesley Bell, and Representative Ann Wagner rejected her request for help. Anne has been in touch with Senator Josh Hawley's office about a possible exception, but so far it's unclear whether they have submitted a request for an exception to the State Department. As of this broadcast, Hawley's office has not responded to our inquiry seeking clarification. A congressional liaison with the State Department said, quote, "We do not have any additional information to share about U.S. Refugee Admissions Program case processing or Welcome Corps applications at this time." In the meantime, some refugee processing has resumed under court order. Earlier this month, Pasito, the plaintiff in a lawsuit challenging the suspension of the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, safely resettled in the United States. Several other refugee families are scheduled to arrive in the coming days. However, Welcome Corps cases are not included in those currently being processed, and the Welcome Corps resettlement program continues to be suspended. Anne Ross says she and the volunteers continue to hold furniture and resources for Nashat Al-Jarwan's family in a storage locker. She says she won't stop pursuing the case to bring them to St. Louis. Special thanks to St. Louis Public Radio editor Lara Hamden for providing real-time translation for us so we could bring you Nashat's story.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.